cautious not to commit an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya 13 says, Shulapani sama yadi bhakta ninda kare bhagavata pramana tathapi sigra mare. Hena Vaishnavera ninda sarvagyahai se janera adha pata sarva shastrikai. Quote, even if one is as strong as Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand, one will nonetheless fall down from his spiritual position if he tries to insult a Vaishnava. That is the verdict of all Vedic scriptures. End quote. He also says this in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 22. Vaishnavera ninda karibeka yaragana tararaksha samarthya nahika kono jana. Shulapani sama yadi vaishnavere ninda tathapiha nashayaya kahe shastra vrinde. Ihana maniya ye sujana ninda kare janme janme se papishta daiva doshe mare. One who blasphemes a Vaishnava cannot be protected by anyone. Even if a person is as strong as Lord Shiva, if he blasphemes a Vaishnava, he is sure to be destroyed. This is the verdict of all Shastras. If one does not care for the verdict of the Shastras and dares blaspheme a Vaishnava, he suffers life after life because of this. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Discussion Between Jada Bharata and Maharaj Rahugana. Om Ajnanatmirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. You have that song? Okay. Can you distribute and I have a copy, please? Thank you. This is a prayer called Vaishnava Vignapti, written by Narottam Das Thakur. And as we were discussing yesterday, these are the glories of a Vaishnava. The glories of the association of a Vaishnava and the dangers of offending or disrespecting a Vaishnava. So the first verse is, O Vaishnava Goswami, please be merciful to me now. There is no one except you who can purify the fallen souls. Where can anyone find such a merciful personality whose mere audience sends all sins far away? One becomes purified after bathing in the water of the sacred Ganges many times, but just the sight of you purifies the fallen souls. One becomes purified after bathing in the waters of the sacred Ganges many times, but just the sight of you purifies the fallen souls. This is your great power. Actually, it is described that a Vaishnava is even more powerful than this. For a person to become purified of their previous sins, one has to take bath in the Ganges many times. But according to this verse, according to Narottam Das Thakur, even if one doesn't take bath in the Ganges, one just sees a Vaishnava. One becomes absolved of all their sins. Hence it's described that you don't even have to see a Vaishnava, you just have to think about him. And that is also relieving of all the sins. You don't even have to meet him, just think about him. Seeing is also not necessary. This is the power. The holy name delivers one who has offended Lord Hari. But deliverance is impossible if one offends you. Your heart is always the resting place of Lord Govinda. And Lord Govinda says, the Vaishnavas are in my heart. I desire to have the dust of your holy feet in every birth I may take. Please consider Narottam Das yours and be kind upon him. Since it's an opportunity to become purified, thinking about the great Vaishnavas. Yeah, Mridanga is here. Can you play? It's just the regular 3-beat.
Ebaro karuna koro Vaishnava Gosa Evara Karuna Koro Vaishnava Gosai Patita Pavana Toma Vineke Hona Yaharani kate gele Abhadure jaye Emona doyala Prabhu Kevako dhapa Gangara parasha hoile Ashate pava Darshane pavitra kora e tumara gun Haristhane aparadhe Hare Hare Naam Hare Hare Naam nahi paritraan. Tumar hridaye sada Govinda Vishram Govinda Kohe Namura Vaishnava Paran Vaishnava para prati janme kore asha charane radhule Narotame koro daya apnar bole Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Jaya Vaishnava Thakur Jaya Vaishnava Thakur Jaya Vaishnava Thakur Jaya Vaishnava Thakur Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada.
Maharaj Rahugana is expressing the glory of Jada Bharat in this way. If we see, who is the person who actually takes offense when he or she is insulted by somebody, what kind of a person actually accepts the insult? The person who actually thinks that the insult is true. Right? If someone calls another person, you're a dog. And the second person gets upset because how dare you call me a dog? So what happens is one false ego clashes with another false ego. And it seems that the other person is speaking some truth. But a person like Maharaj Jada Bharat, that's why he's saying you're completely free of the bodily conception of life. That even if he were to be called a dog, it doesn't matter to him. It doesn't matter because it's not true. And Jada Bharat has already asked him, who are you blaspheming? Who are you calling a dead man, fat man, thin man, lazy, retard? Who are you calling? Are you calling it the body such? Because the body is not any of these. It's inert anyway. Are you calling it the soul? The soul is not any of these anyway. So who are you talking to? So when a person is free of false ego or the bodily conception of life, insult has no value. Whether someone insults them or praises them, they don't give it much value. Because even for praise, who's praising? Somebody who's really under the modes of nature, if they praise us, does it have any value? Shvavid varaha ushtra kharai samstuti purusha pasu. The Bhagavatam says that people in this world who are severely under the modes of nature, they meet another person who's under the modes of nature and they glorify them. You're so great. Like, what does that mean? It has not. Bhagavatam says it's like the society of camels, asses, hogs and dogs. And they all get together and they glorify each other. You're very great. No, no, no. Actually, you're very great. Oh, no, no. You are the blessing to this world. Oh, come on. You are. It's the International Society for Mutual Backscratching. It has no meaning. People who are, it's Bhagavatam says, people who have a doggish mentality. Doggish mentality is, unless I have a master who pays me for what I do, I cannot be happy. And whatever the master says, I wag my tail, I fall on the floor, you know, I roll over, and the master throws something and says, fetch, and I run and I fetch it. I salivate when he brings food to me, and I bark that this is my master's territory, you cannot enter. These are the boundaries. You cannot come in. Like that. Just for the little crumbs of food that the master throws. In English it's called largesse. Largesse means little piece of food that the master throws on the floor for the dog. And the dog becomes loyal like anything. But who's the master? The master must be like a complete womanizer, alcoholic, cheat. But the dog says, oh, you're my master. Because that's the doggish mentality. Or hoggish. Hoggish means, like I said one time, I knew a person who said that he loves seafood. He eats whatever he sees. Seafood. It doesn't matter what it is. Good, bad, stool-like stuff, but hey, very nice. I mean, imagine the concept of cutting open an animal and eating the insides of it. It just doesn't make sense. It is so revolting. But people have such taste for it. Oh, this is the inside of such and such. The French, they stuff their ducks. They overfeed their ducks so that the liver and stomach gets swollen. And that's what they eat, and it's a delicacy, foie gras. Idiots. This is crazy. Hoggish. Or asinine mentality. Asinine mentality means persons carrying the mentality that I have to work very hard to make a living. And unless I work very hard, I will not get anything to eat. Srila Prabhupada challenged such a mentality. He said, come to our temple, eat for free, chant Hare Krishna with us. What's your problem? Oh, no, no, Swamiji. We have to work very hard. For what? It says that to survive, to subsist for one little two meals in a day, one really need not work very hard. No, no, Swamiji. How can we not work very hard? Okay, even after you work very hard, it's not like you're eating something very fantastic. If you eat something so-called fantastic, you get indigestion. You have to eat something simple anyway. Whether you're a rich man or a poor man, you cannot afford messing up with your health. So, if you're going to eat something simple, we're offering something simple. Come and eat for free. And chant Hare Krishna. No, no. There were two brothers. They were fishermen. And one brother would lie down under the tree, sing songs, and relax, and not work hard. But his other brother would work very hard. He would wake up at the crack of dawn. He would go out into the ocean, throw his net, collect fish, clean them nicely and all of that. So as the older brother, he went to his younger brother and chastised him. Do something with your life. Come, let's go. Let's throw the net and catch some good fish. So the younger brother said, what for? What do you mean, what for? When you catch good fish, if you do it early in the morning, you're the first to get there, you will get good fish. So what? Oh, if you get good fish, you can sell it in the market for a good price. So what happens with that? What a fool. When you make a good price, you have good savings. And with savings, you collect them over time and you can build a nice house for yourself. He said, so what do I do with a nice house? Oh, if you have a nice house, you can have a nice backyard and you can retire peacefully and lie down under a tree and enjoy nature. He said, but I'm doing that even now. Why do I have to wait till I retire to do the same thing I'm doing now? Prabhupada narrates this story. He said, hard work. That's an asinine mentality. He describes how the master makes the ass work so hard for the promise of a lump of grass, a fistful of grass at the end of the day. And he says that such a person doesn't have even the iota of intelligence that there is grass available freely everywhere. But he thinks only my master can feed me. Such a foolish mentality. That's why he's called Mudha. Mudha means like really dull. There is grass freely available. But he will think, when I work very hard, my master, who's very compassionate, at the end of the day, gives me a whole fistful of grass. And that grass is so juicy. It's available for free. No. And the camel. Camel-like mentality. A camel has a long neck, a big hump, a big head, but absolutely no brain. Because it's described that the camel chews on thorns. And when he chews on thorns, those thorns prick his tongue and gums. And whatever blood, he tastes that blood that oozes. And he thinks, boy, these thorns are so tasty. It must be like some delicacy or something. Look at the humans, they're so foolish. They're eating vegetables. They should eat thorns. They're so tasty. Camels are like that. They work very hard. They walk. They live in a place where there's hardly any water. But they love to eat thorns. So Prabhupada describes a thorn-eating civilization is such that persons, they expend their own semen in the name of sex life. And they think, this is so good. They're wasting their blood. It takes something like 50 drops of blood to make one drop of semen or something. Some such. And when it's easily discharged, one is giving away one's blood. And they think, really nice. At the cost of one's own life. And the more semen is discharged, like the simple truths of life don't stick in the consciousness. So when such persons, such society, they appreciate each other for their great qualities, it has no meaning. So we shouldn't get too carried away by worldly praise, nor should we get too disturbed by insult. A person who's free of the bodily concept of life is not disturbed by it. Therefore in Bhagavad Gita we hear it so many times, Sukheshu Dukheshu Anuvigna. Mana apamanayo. One is freed of the whole idea of pursuit of, oh, I need someone's appreciation, recognition. And they're also free of the burden of insult. Someone insulted, so what? It's not true. Am I really this body? We take it for as it's true, because we accept we are this body. As soon as we have this conviction, I am this body, I am this mind, then when others insult us, it hurts. Oh, you're not good looking. What did you wear that today? It's not looking nice. Immediately, oh, what do you mean it's not looking nice? Or for simple things. Why did you do it like this? Why didn't you do it like that? Oh, it's a bodily conception of life. The great personalities, they're not affected. It's like the caravan that continues even while the dogs bark. How much attention do we pay when while we're walking on the street? If a dog barks, we don't pay any attention. Or we shouldn't pay any attention. I don't know if we do, but we shouldn't. It has no meaning. The dog is barking. Don't walk on the street. This is my master's house. Woof, woof. And we're like, ah, whatever. Keep walking. We don't get bent out of shape. You know, today the dog really barked at me and I'm really upset. It has no value. It's like that. It's described when one devotee was saying that in the olden system, when Vedic life was really alive, people as grahasthas, Prabhupada told that this is what they used to do. The wife would cook nicely, the husband would offer it to their deity, and before he ate it, he would stand outside and call out, "Is there anyone who's hungry here? Please come and eat." He has to call it three times. That means anyone was welcome to come to the house and eat. And such persons were called atithi. In Sanskrit, tithi means date or particular time. Atithi means without a particular time, meaning uninvited surprise guests. And uninvited surprise guests were treated as if Lord Vishnu has arrived to their house. Because you never know when Vishnu will come. You won't say, you know, look at your calendar. Do you have like on Thursday afternoon? Will that work for you? I'd like to come to your house. Oh no, Lord Vishnu, I have actually a tennis game. Can you come like Friday night? Atithi. Without announcing, the guest would arrive. And they are considered to be the embodiment of Lord Vishnu. So a grahastha should be prepared. Anytime, anybody can come, and there should be prasadam ready for them. Or at least nice words. That was in the Satyayuga's time. Then as time progressed into wonderful Kali Yuga, instead of writing atithi, they write in India, I don't know if you've seen, Shubha Labha. Shubha means auspicious, and labh means prosperity. So that means only Lakshmi Devi is invited to come. Others are not allowed. Because when Lakshmi comes, everything is auspicious and profitable. Others are not allowed. And then it's described, but nowadays, they don't write Shubha Labha. They write, beware of dog. Don't even try getting close to the house here. Beware of dog. You're not welcome. We call the police. These are the boards in front of the house. This is how people have become. No one is welcome to my house. So one shouldn't get too disturbed. Here, the personalities like this, they don't get disturbed. They don't get disturbed by insult, and they don't get disturbed by praise. When Lord, there is twice or thrice in the text and in the purports, there is mention of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a completely liberated personality. And when Lord Shiva was insulted very badly back in the fourth canto, end of third, beginning of fourth, when Daksha, Prajapati, he felt insulted by Lord Shiva. This is the difference. He had this serious bodily conception of life, that I am the greatest Prajapati. I am the son of Lord, I am the grandson of Lord Brahma. And I am so powerful that when I enter the assembly, all the demigods rise in honor, except Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Brahma, of course, is my father, not grandfather, father. But Shiva, how dare, he's my son-in-law. And a son-in-law is supposed to be subordinate to the father-in-law. So he had this bodily designation, I'm the father-in-law. And by that little gesture of so-called insult, he got totally bent out of shape. And he started speaking badly about Lord Shiva. Oh, you who live in the crematorium, who rubs his body with ash, wears a garland of skulls, snakes and scorpions surround you, your followers are the ghosts and goblins and zombies. Who are you? Who do you think you are? And a good lesson was Lord Shiva was sat there as if no one was speaking. He was just totally undisturbed. Totally undisturbed. Like, whatever. And the more he was undisturbed, the more Daksha became angry. And he wanted to incite a reaction from Lord Shiva. Because when we are insulting someone, if they don't react, then who suffers? The insulter. Is it not disturbing you? Let me say something even worse. We extend the insult to such a degree just to see if they're getting even a little agitated. Because as soon as they get agitated, it gives us peace. Finally, my insult has worked. But if a person doesn't get disturbed in any way, how much ever one insults, then the one who's insulting gets so disturbed in mind. This is called Dhira. And Lord Shiva is called Dhira. Absolutely not disturbed. Doesn't matter. Any kind of agitation, not disturbed. Either he's being insulted or he's being attracted by Parvati. Prabhupada describes in one lecture how Parvati was given this service of going to disturb Lord Shiva in his meditation. She was a very young girl and she was supposed to touch his genitals and agitate him. He was just not disturbed. Prabhupada says he's called Dhira. So either this side or that side, not disturbed. So Maharaj Rahugana is saying, I recognize you're such a great personality. And such a personality I have insulted. It's my mistake. And I might be a very great person. In fact, I am as good as Lord Shiva, he says. And in the purports, Vrindavan Das Thakur is being quoted that it doesn't matter. Even Lord Shiva, if he insults a Vaishnava, finished. Of course, Lord Shiva doesn't insult Vaishnavas. But even if one were at the exalted position that Lord Shiva has, and they think nothing will happen to me, and I can freely offend the Vaishnavas, finished. Finished immediately. So he is called Shulapani. There is significance. In Sanskrit, anytime you hear the word Pani, it means carrier of. Or possessing. Like Krishna is called, or Vishnu is called Chakrapani because he holds the disc. Lord Ramachandra is called Kodandapani because he holds the Kodanda bow. And here he's called Shulapani because he holds the trident. This trident signifies that Lord Shiva has complete control over the threefold miseries of life. We are the persons who are stuck at the end of the trident, because we are the ones who are getting bothered by the threefold miseries of life constantly. But Lord Shiva is the one who controls the trident. That means all threefold miseries, miseries due to one's own body and mind, miseries due to someone else's body and mind, and all climactic higher order disturbances. Lord Shiva is completely undisturbed by any of them. In fact, he controls them. Even if he's such a great person, a little offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, that's the end. So Vrindavan Das Thakur says, Hena Vaishvanera Ninda Sarvagya Hai Se Janera Adha Pata Sarva Shastra Kai. He says, even if one is as strong as Lord Shiva, the Vedas describe that if he tries to insult a Vaishnava, he falls down from his position. Falling down from a spiritual position is a very, very serious, failure. Because to ascend or climb or to become spiritually elevated is the rarest phenomena. Rarest phenomenon. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. Human beings in general are not interested in perfecting their lives. Yatatam api siddhanam kaschin man veti tatvata. Even among the rarest of rares who want to perfect their lives, there is hardly anyone who understands Krishna. And among the many who understand Krishna, there is hardly anyone who is actually uplifted in their consciousness. So from such a rare position to give it all up for the sake of give it all up because of insulting a Vaishnava is a really foolish mistake. So the onus is on us to guard that little gift that Krishna has given, that gift of the relationship with Him, which He doesn't give. He gives liberation very easily. Krishna, I want liberation. Take it and go away. Don't bother me. But Krishna, I want a relationship with you. Oh, really? Are you serious? Let's see. So something that's a very rare gift, to squander it all by insulting a Vaishnava is like the most idiotic and foolish mistake one can make. Therefore, it's important to be on guard always. When can we drop the guard? Never. Never. How much ever intimate that Vaishnava may become to us, and there can be a lot of friendship, there can be a lot of intimacy, we can get away by saying anything, but never make the mistake of offending. Because it's very risky. Spiritual life is, we heard Prabhu saying, is razor's edge, like Prabhupada had quoted. Razor's edge, sharp. If used carefully, you can't cut vegetables, you can't shave well with a blunt razor. It has to be sharp. The sharper the knife, the better the outcome is. But a slight negligence immediately cuts and blood comes. So we cannot become negligent with the razor sharp devotional service. It's as potent. If used properly, if applied properly, you get the best results. Slight negligence, finished. Any comments, questions about the mat? And then Acharya Nista.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Can you kindly please tell some things about the pastime of Lord Shiva and where he's embracing his wife, poverty, and the Brahmana insulted him, and because of this offense, he didn't get to go home back to Godhead?
Oh, I don't know about a Brahmana, but I know a king, Chitraketu. Oh. Lord Shiva, because he is Dhira, Madhavendra Puri Prabhu used the phrase that he gave the most unconventional Bhagavatam class. There is nobody in this universe who makes his wife sit on his lap while giving a Bhagavatam class. In fact, even the most lusty people, they don't make their girlfriends or wives sit on their lap when they're there with their friends. It just doesn't match. It's called rasabhas. It's just inappropriate. But Lord Shiva, because he has his senses so thoroughly controlled, he was giving Bhagavatam class sitting under a banyan tree. And the great sages were sitting there. Narada, Shukadev Goswami, they're all great brahmacharis, like super celibate brahmacharis. And Parvati Devi was sitting on his left lap. And he was giving class, totally undisturbed, like absorbed in Krishna Katha, like anything. So Maharaj Chitraketu was flying in his airplane. And when he saw that, he and Shiva were buddies, the friends. Because he had the darshan of Lord Sankarshan. And Lord Sankarshan is also the object of meditation for Lord Shiva. So they are friends. And so in a friendly way, he actually intended to glorify Lord Shiva. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Wife sitting on the lap while you're speaking to brahmacharis. Cool, huh? Some very friendly way. Lord Shiva was not disturbed because he knows the heart of Chitraketu, and the sages didn't say anything too, because, which is a fact, Lord Shiva is very... But Parvati Devi took objection. It's like, what? Why are you speaking like that in such an uncultured way? You have such demon mentality. You should be a demon. How are you such a devotee? You should be a demon. I curse you to be a demon. You insult my husband, who's the lord of all the living entities, Bhutanath. He's called Bhava. Bhava means by whom all living entities come into material existence. And as she is Bhavani, she facilitates it. How dare you speak about my husband like that? You think he's ordinary? She's an angry type, huh? Because her predecessor, Sati, was also very upset. She chastised her own father. So she told him, you have demon mentality, you should become a demon. And in Chitraketu, instead of saying, ma'am, I didn't mean it that way, he didn't say like that. He said, whatever you say, so be it. I know in my heart I was not insulting him, so be it. He circumambulated her, took her blessings and went away. And Lord Shiva didn't speak at that time. After Chitraketu left, he turned to Parvati Devi and said, what have you done? You haven't recognized the greatness of this devotee. Have you noticed that when you cursed him, his mind was just not disturbed? In fact, he sought your blessings. And such great persons, they're not afraid of anything. They will happily go to... they'll be liberated, they'll go down to hell, they'll go to the heavenly planets. They don't have any fear. Because they're Narayana Paraya. Narayana Para means they've completely dedicated themselves to Lord Narayana. So we understand that this was Krishna's way of orchestrating this pastime to glorify Lord Shiva, to glorify Chitraketu, and to glorify Parvati, because she's very chaste to her husband. So in the end, everyone's glorified. But the pastime is really super. And he becomes Vritrasura, the demon who then fights Indra. And Prabhupada writes in that purport, in a particular fight between Indra and Vritrasura, he says, although Indra is the demigod and Vritrasura is a demon by birth, in this situation, Vritrasura is the demigod and Indra is the demon. Because Indra is so possessive of his throne and Vritrasura is completely freed from bodily conception of life. Is that okay? You satisfied? Acharya Nishtha? Prabhu?
Thanks, Prabhu. I just had two questions. So, you mentioned that the way of getting free from offenses by being humble in spite of being praised or blamed, being off the bodily concept, because that's the cause of our agitation.
The two different things. One, to be free of offenses, one must cultivate a humble mood. And that is how we slowly progress towards being freed from the bodily conception of life. And on the other side, a person who's freed from the bodily conception of life, to whatever degree, to that degree, insult or praise. It does not affect them.
Right, so I was thinking in the case of us, we have a material body. So praise or insult, from a proper perspective, it shouldn't agitate our minds or disturb us because we're not the body. But what about in the case of a spiritual personality? And also, like Lord Shiva, I understand his body is eternal. So a spiritual personality, if someone, in other words, a different principle would be implying because they are their body. So for us, if someone insults the body, we don't mind because, like you're saying, I'm not the body. So, but if someone maybe insults in a spiritual personality's body, that's who they are. So what principles would apply?
If someone goes to Krishna and say, "You're so black," or something, that's not an insult. It doesn't matter to him. And insult only comes when there is a material conception of things. Bodily conception means material conception. So for Lord Shiva or anyone, in fact, actually, if you hear Daksha's insults to Lord Shiva, when does a person insult another one? When actually they're recognizing they have a good quality that they don't like. So in one way they take it as an appreciation. Who are you? You live in the crematorium. You smear ash on your body. It's a way of saying you're so detached from everything. And so they take it as appreciation, whatever. It doesn't matter. Krishna was insulted so many times. Shishupal said, "You're like this, you're like that." It didn't matter to Krishna.
That's beautiful. It's just a glorification
it's a glorification in a negative way. Just as, you know, we say Kamsa was always Krishna conscious because he was thinking of Krishna all the time. Just unfavorably, but he was thinking about it.
Okay, thank you. The next question I was just in this discussion would be, if one has qualities, they've developed spiritual qualities, and how do they remain free from pride? Because then their mind or something, maybe an assembly of devotees, they're able to give instruction and receive appreciation. So how are they able to remain humble in the context of receiving glorification? And even if they are invested with those divine qualities, then it's an area I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, so one doesn't think that one is the source of those qualities. One may be an instrument, but one never thinks that he's the source of it. How much glorification did people give to Srila Prabhupada? How much? Jagat Guru, fancy cars, royal throne, silver cups and gold cups, and people fanning him, and thousands of people thronging. What did he say? "I'm just an instrument of my Guru Maharaj." I mean, he never thought that he's the source of all of that. Krishna is the source. And Krishna can empower anyone. Yeah? Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. Without Krishna's empowerment, cannot do anything.
So for some reason, among all those, that assembly, he was the one who received that mercy.
Who is that?
Srila Prabhupada, like you're saying, in a big assembly.
No, everyone received mercy.
So couldn't that also be a source of false pride, that I've received mercy?
Thankfully, Prabhupada didn't feel like that.
Right.
Here it says, "Patita pavana toma vina kehonai." When a person feels patita means fallen. And there's another prayer to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda that Narottam Das Thakur says, "Shri Krishna Chaitanya, daya karo more. Patita pavana hetu tava avatara." You have descended just to uplift the completely fallen souls. And I am the most fallen, so I am the first in line. I am the most fallen. That's the mood of a devotee. I'm the most fallen. And Krishna can empower anybody depending on their receptivity. Anyone should never think, should never, never, never by mistake think, oh, I'm indispensable. It takes microsecond to, for Krishna to show us that we are nothing. I'll tell you a pastime of Vishnu Jan Maharaj. It's written in Radha Damodar Vilas. When he was ostracized from ISKCON by Srila Prabhupada, three of them, Vishnu Jan Maharaj was given a plan for redemption. If you go and open centers, I'll take you back. So he went to Austin, Texas. And he was like a Gandharva. When he would sing, people would be attracted. So in the quadrangle, or the, you know, right outside the library, Vishnu Jan Maharaj was all alone and he was playing his mridanga and chanting Hare Krishna. In about 5 minutes, 5 people, 10, 15, 20, and suddenly in about 20 minutes of kirtan, there were like 400 people gathered around him. And it was like fantastic, and they were all joining in the kirtan. And as soon as he finished kirtan, Jai Om Vishnupad, and he paid obeisances. And he had the potency that he made everyone pay obeisances. They didn't know what they were doing, but everyone paid obeisances. And as he was paying obeisances, he was thinking, I'm such a good kirtan leader. For all the, he thought like that. And suddenly he felt a warm trickle of something, some warm liquid. And when he looked up, a dog was urinating on him. And his realization immediately was, look at me, the moment I take little credit, Krishna showing me, you're nothing but, you know, worse than dog urine. And he had to immediately, no, no, Krishna. It's Krishna's holy name, that is the attraction, not my singing. So it takes very little time for Krishna to teach us. The moment we think, oh, I've done something great, nobody is indispensable. The saying is, the graveyard is full of indispensable people. We're here, gone tomorrow. No clue, yeah? Nobody will remember us. 100 years later, no one's going to say, oh, such and such devotee. It's all Krishna's mercy. And even if someone says, Prabhu, you have done such a fantastic job, we can only say, why, I'm very grateful that Krishna chose me as an instrument. Krishna can choose anyone. I'm very honored and grateful to have been given some service to do. And end with there, without thinking. What he said is actually true. It's really nice. Nothing. We can't fall in that trap. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande.